After 19 hours of labor, the nurses place my daughter Eliana in my arms. Exhausted and spent, I was overwhelmed by a love so fierce it frightened me. How would I protect this precious child from the world? How would I protect her from myself with all my thoughts and feelings? And I set my heart on being the perfect mom. This is Christian Curious, and I'm your host, Dr. Haley Gray Scott. Each week, we tackle some of the hardest, most pressing questions facing Christians in the 21st century. 13 years into my journey as a mother, I know now there is no such thing as the perfect mom, and I know I'm not alone in facing this immense pressure to be the perfect mom. But if women cannot be perfect mothers, can we settle for being good ones? Today, I'm talking with Karen Rivendenera about the question, what makes a good mom? Karen is an award-winning author of more than 20 books for both children and adults. Her work has appeared in Sojourners, Christianity Today, Relevant, Think Christian, and Engineering and Mining Journal. Her most recent book, Saints of Feather and Fang, explores how the animals we love and fear connect us to God. Karen, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
It's great to hear your voice because, you know, I know that, you know, we've been friends for a very long time, and it's been a long time since we've connected. But actually, you know, you were one of the first people that really started me thinking about motherhood, you know, because you had written a book about not losing your identity as a mother before I was a mother. And so you've kind of been my northern star when it comes to thinking about motherhood, you know. And so my first question for you is, what do you think is the difference between being the perfect mother and being a good mother?
That's a great question. I think, you know, one, the perfect mother is obviously, as you kind of already said, it's unattainable. It's just absolutely impossible. And we know that in our heads, but I think somewhere deep in our hearts, we feel like that's going to be true, that we're going to be able to like tackle this. Whereas being a good mother is obviously so much more realistic. And I think that's the thing we should be aiming for, because the perfect mother never gets anything wrong and just knows how to handle every situation that comes up at every stage of life. Obviously that can't happen. The good mother tries her best, but also understands that we're going to mess up. And so is ready to apologize when we do, to seek to do better, you know, to notice the things that kind of make us not at our best.
Yeah.
And try to, work toward at least improving that, or at least acknowledging that weakness and making that accessible. So I think those are two, or some of the ways that they are very different things.
What do you think are some of the, you know, unrealistic expectations that you have seen mothers put on themselves?
Yeah, I mean, I think the classic one is, you know, thinking we are going to know how to do it. You know, particularly when we look at our own growing up years. It's obviously, you know, we're all very aware of our own parents' shortcomings. And so I think particularly before we become parents or before we hit every age with our kids, it's very easy for us to think, oh, well, I'm going to do it the right way. I'm going to do it, you know, because I know, you know, and hopefully we have learned certainly from the mistakes of our parents or things that we've seen go on around us. But I think we have this unrealistic expectation that we're going to be able to like nail it, like because,
right.
And I think that makes it really hard. Like we can try and we can do our best. And some of us are great in some seasons and some situations, and some of us, you know, stink at those. So I think it's, again, this expectation that we're going to, you know, no matter how much we read or how much we pay attention, like we're going to be great at it all. And again, I think that gets back to the idea of being a good mom. It's just knowing like, yeah, there's going to be situations that you're going to have no idea how to handle or you're going to mess up. And knowing that that's okay. You know, again, there should be grace, hopefully in family structures and all that. But I think that that's a huge one. I think the other maybe expectation is that we, and you know, this kind of gets put on us from outside very often, but it's just that motherhood should be or is going to be this very fulfilling relationship and role. that it's just going to, you know, every single day we're going to be so overjoyed and fulfilled with these things. And as most of us know, certainly, you know, that happens on some days, on good days, but not all days.
Right.
And sometimes it's like the opposite of fulfilling, because it can be super frustrating and super discouraging and heartbreaking and all these things.
Absolutely. You know, and especially when, you know, things start falling through the cracks and, you know, I'm pretty notorious for that, especially as, you know, I am a writer as well. And when I'm writing, I have to go into my writing cave. And so what happens then is that, you know, I get these emails about, oh, my gosh, you know, like yesterday I was cooking dinner for my family and my daughter rushes up to me and she says, oh, my gosh, Mom, we're supposed to be at school right now for a school conference, you know, and, you know, I'm just, you know, there's things that you feel like you're constantly dropping the ball. And then, you know, it can even get more serious as, you know, later on, as, you know, your child is confronting the world as it is today. And how do you navigate that? And the questions that we have about, okay, how do you parent in a pandemic? I mean, who would have thought that we would have to know that? So why do you think that we, you know, you touched on it a little bit, you know, as far as, you know, society putting these expectations on mothers, but can you go into that a little bit further about why do some women place such high expectations on themselves when it comes to being a mother?
One is, I think, because, again, at least speaking for myself, like, you know, before I had kids, like, you just think, like, oh, this will be it. You just do X, Y, and Z, and then everything turns out fine, and you sort of know what you're capable of and can do. But I think the other side of it is, and you had talked about this, like, the ferocity of love that we feel for our children, and just the absolute depth of it is, yeah, like, there's nothing, you know, if I mess up something at work, if I get something, you know, if I write something that later on I'm like, I don't know if I agree with that anymore or whatever, like, that's fine. That's one thing. But, like, if we simply mess up with our kids, like, that's, I don't know, that's, like, next level. So I think that's it. Like, we just love our kids so much and want to do right by them generally. So I think that's the best case for our expectations. And so we really have this desire to be the kind of moms who can just handle it all and do it all and be, you know, almost everything that our kids need us to be. And that's a great thing, you know, for the most part, as long as we recognize that, yeah, it's just not always going to happen. I mean, like you talked about with the, I mean, I drop balls on things all the time. Less so as my kids get older. My kids are now 19, almost 18 and 15.
I cannot believe that, by the way.
Isn't that unbelievable? I know. I can't, as I say that, I'm like, oh my goodness. I know. My daughter is like 7 days left of high school at this point. But, you know, like, you realize that there are so many things, like, they just, you know, in their lives that just kind of go on or whatever. But, you know, just the other week, there was something similar to what you're saying that all of a sudden, you know, came up that I had not paid attention to that was happening at school. And it was like, oh goodness. Okay, yeah, I can do that, you know, and I have to cancel another meeting. So I'm like, oh, I totally didn't put that on the calendar. But, yeah, I don't know. Sorry, I kind of rambled off track a little bit. But I do think it is, in the best case, we put these unrealistic expectations on ourselves because we do love our kids so much, and we want to see them do well in the world and be good, and we want to see them fulfilled. And so we sort of feel like if we get something wrong, it's going to, you know, make their life more difficult. And in some cases that, you know, is very true. In other cases, our mistakes or, you know, ways we mess up help shape our kids into the people they're meant to be. So,
yeah, I like that. Shape our kids into the people they are meant to be, not the people that we want them to be necessarily, but the people that, you know, that they're supposed to be. One of the things that I've thought often about is how high my expectations are for myself, because I did not honestly have a good role model for a mother. And I turned that into I'm never going to make a mistake. I'm always going to be there for my kids. And then when I mess up, I, you know, and I've grown over the years, but, you know, in the beginning, I felt like if I messed up at all, I was so hard on myself. And I know that that has been the experience in talking with other women who may not have had good experiences growing up, and they want to turn the ship around. They want to avoid that iceberg of the Titanic. You know, they want to steer the clear of the kind of environment that they grew up in. And when they mess up, it becomes so deeply personal, and it becomes so deeply painful. And I wondered if you had any advice for women who might really be struggling when they don't feel like they're measuring up to the expectations that society or they place on themselves.
Yeah, I mean, that is super hard. And, you know, you hit on so many good points. So, you know, the first is that I think there's something so amazing when women and, you know, men come from difficult family systems, and they decide and are very intentional, I am going to do something, I'm going to do it different. And they not only just decide it in their mind, but they set into place, you know, kind of new, healthier systems. You know, they go to therapy, they get healthy. They recognize the things that were missing, and kind of, you know, I've seen this all the time, and they are able to create a family system and structure that feels supportive and loving and kind. You know, even if it's just putting in rules, like there's going to be no yelling in this house or whatever it is, you know? So I have seen that so many times, but you're right. Even the most intentional, healthiest, most self-aware parents are still going to mess up. And so I think it is, that self-forgiveness, you know, and just being aware and apologizing to your kids then too. I mean, to me, that's huge. Long time ago, and I read somewhere that, you know, they talk about like, you should never fight in front of your kids as a married couple. But the person I read said, actually, that's not true. You shouldn't fight nasty in front of your kids, but you shouldn't fight nasty, period. But his thing was, if you fight, because it is going to happen, you're going to snap at each other, you're going to talk rudely to each other, the most important thing is for your kids to see you apologize and to make up, you know, or to forgive one another, because that models this idea of, in families, people who live together do bicker and snap at each other and are not always in their best thing. But what families do is they forgive and they apologize and they move on and, you know, try to do better. And so I feel like that's a huge part of the parenting journey as well, is that, yeah, I mean, it's easy to slip back into patterns and ways, you know, that may be unhealthy. But it's like, the sooner we recognize it, the sooner maybe we, you know, if our kids are age appropriate, and it's to explain to them too, hey, I don't like the way I handled this, I didn't act, you know, great, can you forgive me? Or even sharing a little bit of why it's so painful to you. And then forgiving yourself and knowing, you know, that's what grace and mercy and redemption and all that stuff is all about, that there are second chances. And that's what families are about, is offering that to one another. So I do think it is hard, because we beat ourselves up all the time, but giving ourselves grace and giving one another grace is so huge.
Yeah, those two points are, you know, dead on, I think, is the self-forgiveness and then the openness with your kids. I mean, I try to be very open with my kids, probably more open than I should be. but I always tell them that my role as a parent is to prepare them and protect them. And, you know, based on my own philosophy of life, I'm always going to err on preparation. I'm always going to prepare them for the world. So, you know, my kids are very well versed in what's happening in the world, and they're well versed in different things that, you know, teenagers struggle with. And so we're very open, and I feel like I'm constantly apologizing.
Are you ready to earn a master's degree, but concerned about fitting more into your already busy schedule? Visit denverseminary.edu to learn more about our fully online programs, financial aid opportunities, and more. The education you receive at Denver Seminary will challenge you to grow spiritually, intellectually, relationally, and professionally. Learn more today at denverseminary.edu.
So if we're not going to be the perfect mom, what does the good mom look like, you know, guided by godly principles?
Ooh, yeah. I mean, it's interesting because as you were, you know, saying that about your, you know, your philosophy of preparing and protecting, I just had this kind of thought how interesting that is, because I wouldn't have necessarily pulled those words for myself, although I appreciate both those things. And what I love is that God, like, God made you the woman you are and gave you the children you have for a reason, you know? And so I think being a good mother is like really honoring who we are and who God made us to be and honoring our instincts. Like the idea that you feel so strongly, like prepare and protect, like that those are the two things that come to mind. To me, following that is so God honoring. And where those should be values every parent has to some extent, but that those are like your main ones, and following that feels like that's what a good mother does. So, you know, if parents, you know, and everybody comes again to it with different personalities, different reasons for what they're doing, but I think it's really being prayerful and listening to the Spirit and listening to kind of God's leading on, yeah, what are the things that matter to me? What do I feel like God is really saying I need to impart to my kids? And, you know, part of it, too, like when I look back when my kids were little, some of the things I felt like I did wrong or that I was, like, too permissive about or too accommodating or too loose or something on, as my kids are older now, even with that, I sort of see it and go, oh, wow, I see how that kind of makes sense, that it's important that I'm that kind of mom now for the situation we're in. So I feel like, I don't know, I just feel like listening to God and kind of mothering as the people we are, but also, of course, all the things, you know, mothering with the fruits of the Spirit. You know, I mean, I certainly would have done better to be a little more peaceful and self-controlled in some of my more frustrating, more frustrated moments as a mom. You know, I look back and I'm like, oh my gosh, I let stress get to me too much. So I think, yeah, mothering by the fruits of the Spirit, being forgiving and merciful and understanding and, yeah, all those things. But, you know, in looking to, you know, God and scriptures uses mothering examples too, you know, whether it's Jesus as the mother hen gathering the chicks, you know, they're like, you're talking about the protectiveness, you know, all those things. I think we see many good ways that we can be a good mom.
Yeah, I agree totally with the fruits of the Spirit and, you know, letting the principles of godly Christian character guide the way that we mother. As you were talking, I was remembering being rolled out in a wheelchair with Ellie, and I was thinking, oh my gosh, we just paid, you know, we paid our $100 deductible and they're letting me go home with this baby. I mean, and they're not going to give, there's no instruction manual here. And mm-hmm. I mean, I was just completely stunned that like the most precious thing in the world, they were just going to let me walk out of the hospital with it and not tell me how to do anything. and so, yeah, I mean, it's such an incredible honor and an incredible responsibility. And, you know, how can we, you know, bring, you know, the peace and the character of Christ into our relationship with our children is so important. I have seen a lot of moms, you know, in my, you know, interactions with, you know, I've worked a lot with female leaders. I've worked a lot with women, and I have come across a lot of women who are extremely burdened by these unrealistic expectations. And I'm wondering, you know, have you found ways, you know, in your ministry and in your work to help mothers let go of some of these expectations? What are some of the ways that we can, you know, not just think about ourselves, but think about the other mothers in our lives and how we can support and encourage them and help them release themselves from these unrealistic expectations?
Yeah, I think one of the most helpful things is to recognize that there are so many ways to be a good mom. There are so many types of good moms. Kind of opening ourselves up to like historical perspectives on motherhood, that, you know, cultural perspectives on motherhood. The other day, a colleague showed me a video. I can't think of what it was called. It's from I think it's a show on Netflix or something about childhoods in different parts of the world. And they showed a scene, I believe, and sorry if I get this wrong, I believe it was in Japan, where they have like a rite of passage where there's like, they send a three-year-old.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
Are you familiar with this?
Uh-huh.
And I mean, it was amazing. So this three-year-old, like, you know, the kid's kind of like, I don't want to go. And the dad's like, yeah, it's time for you to, you know, you're three, it's time for you to go get our lunch. And they send the child, you know, they live in like an apartment down the elevator. This little three-year-old, you know, walking across town, picks up the lunch and brings it back. And I'm watching it and, of course, like having a heart attack. You know, so I'm like, oh, my goodness, I can't, you know, whatever. But, like, that's a really important thing, you know, and societally, I imagine that they sort of are aware that, like, oh, if you see this three-year-old, you know, maybe show a little caution or kindness or whatever. But again, his parents are not bad parents. That's not like a bad, where I look at it as like, oh my goodness, I would never do, you know, I'm like watching my kids where they're going on, you know, find my iPhone. And I don't know. It just sort of like, again, reminds me, like, there are so many good ways, and the things that we think are being a good parent aren't like universally so, you know, or the story of, you know, Jesus getting left behind at the temple. For most of my life, I've read that and looked at Mary specifically. I always like just, okay, bad because my own maybe internal sexism, but it's like, how do you not notice that your kid is gone for that long? Mm-hmm. Like, why does it take like 3 days to go, oh, wait, where's Jesus? Until you realize, well, then, yeah, the huge family systems traveled together. They would have assumed he was just with somebody else and, you know, all these. And doesn't make them, she wasn't a bad mother, she wasn't negligent, you know, any of that. It's just how it was. So I think the more we recognize that there are different ways to be a good mom, and you don't have to be a good mom in the same way somebody else is a good mom, I think that that can really help us, let us off the hook. Conversely, if there are particularly great moms, you know, who you look at and you go, they just do something really well. I think it's totally legitimate to want to emulate, you know, particularly again, if it's that they're so loving, that they're so kind, that they're so gentle. Those are all great things. But if it's just like, oh, she's a great mom because she throws the perfect, you know, birthday parties, if that's not your thing, it's okay. Your kid will live.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's funny because when I look at the story of that story of Jesus left behind at the temple, mm-hmm. My husband and I disagree on this, but I see the humanity of Jesus and I see him as a child just deciding, hey, I'm just going to do my own thing. And
exactly.
And that's what I always look at because I'm always fascinated by the humanity of Jesus. And so I'm always looking at him like, hey, he's got a little bit of rebellion in him there, but you know, I could be totally mm-hmm. wrong and the theologians can probably hammer me down on that. But yeah, I mean, I think about, oh my gosh, you know, even, you know, parenting Jesus and, you know, how do you do that? But, what about the moms who, you know, they just kind of they get overwhelmed by, you know, doing everything for their kids, especially if they have a lot of kids, how can they build in times for themselves? I mean, how do you like to use the ubiquitous example of the airline mask? How do you put your own mask on first? How important is that?
Yeah, I mean, I do think it is super important and it can be so difficult, obviously, particularly when your kids are little and you just don't, you know, you might not get that much space, but I feel like there is something really important, you know, whether it's rocking a baby to sleep or even if it's like during playtime where you are present with them, but I think it's okay. Like if you enjoy reading, try and keep reading, have those books that you love, you know, and so you can be holding a baby and reading a book at the same time. And, you know, or, you know, children can come with to certain things too. You know, if you really love, you know, walks in nature, take that, you know, have them do things that matter to you too. Even if you can't, you know, do it by yourself. Anytime for me, I mean, I'm a huge introvert, so that was always the hardest part of mothering young kids. As much as I loved being with my kids, they were still people and they were still around me. Mm-hmm. I needed to be alone. So I get it that can be really hard, but asking for help as well. You know, we still so ridiculously value, you know, independence and I can do all this myself. But, you know, whether it is asking friends for help with, you know, sitters or getting sitters, if you can do that, just finding ways to still do the things that fill you up as a human being, I think are super important.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, asking for help does not mean you're a failure.
Nope.
And, you know, that is something that can be really hard to, it can be a hard pill to swallow.
Yep.
But, you know, I know that you have done so much work in the area of motherhood, and I know that you're also a huge animal lover, and your most recent book, you know, before you go, I want you to tell us a little bit about your most recent book, Saints of Feather and Fang.
Yeah, so this is a book a little different, although there's plenty of stories of animal mothers in this that I think most of us moms can connect to as well. In a way, it's sort of like a theology of animals a little bit, you know, just the way that, you know, what animals reveal to us about God, how they connect to us about God. Really just based on the idea of, you know, the scriptures speak so often about animals and God's love of all of creation. And so it's sort of an exploration of all of that, not only, you know, the pets who live in our homes, but, you know, the animals in the ocean deeps and in the wilderness and, you know, in the subtitle, it's the animals we love and fear, because I think there's a lot even that the scarier animals can teach us. So this is kind of a book of my heart. I love animals so much, and I love God so much. So it was wonderful to sort of explore the two. And I think especially as summer is coming and we tend to see more animals, I always appreciate opportunities to learn more about God and how we can experience God in nature and through nature.
Yeah.
It's available, you know, all the usual places.
All the usual places. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, you know, your local bookstore, that Saints of Feather and Fang. Yes, I was riding up in Estes Park and, you know, I would ride all day in my cabin and then I would drive into the Rocky Mountain National Park and there would be no one there. And, you know, it's snowy and cloudy and just incredibly majestic. And I'm driving and I see this animal and I'm like, what is that? And it was a moose. And the moose have been driven over the Rockies because of some of the fires that happened in recent years. But I was like, no, sir, I'm not your supper. But we had to kind of stare off because I was staring at him trying to figure out what he was and taking his picture. And he was looking at me like, what are you going to do? You know, anyway. But
yeah,
I mean, it was totally like, it's, you know, just incredible to, you know, to see, you know, how God, you know, the creativity of God through animals. And so, yes, that's Saints of Feather and Fang. So, Karin, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Christian Curious. Be sure to check out our website at www.christiancurious for more episodes and to learn more about us. And you can reach out to us anytime with your questions or comments to Haley@christiancurious.com. That's Halee@christiancurious.com. Stay curious.